The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Charity Effectiveness Podcast, brought to you by Society Guardian in association with knowhownonprofit.org. I'm David Brindle and I'm The Guardian's Public Services Editor. Coming up in this month's programme...
It means that getting a lot of volunteers to do things that used to be paid for.
It's decisions being made more locally and people actually taking care and responsibility for each other more locally.
It's big, it's bold, but is it here to stay? We discuss the big society and what it means for charities and social enterprises.
It feels like a sort of strange combination between first day at school and freshers week at university. Everyone's sort of wandering around in a bit of a daze, really.
At least 25 of the 232 new MPs have charity sector experience. What will this mean for the sector, and what can they offer? And it's so long, third sector, as we herald the arrival of the civil society.
It's something, as you know, I care passionately about. It's something I would like to be one of the great legacies of this government, is building the big society. Yes, we have to deal with the deficit. Yes, we have to make sure we secure the future in Afghanistan and bring our troops home. But to me personally, what I would most like to be a legacy is actually helping to build the big society through the work that all of you and many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands like you around our country do.
David Cameron there, of course, at the launch of the Big Society, which many see as the centrepiece in the new coalition government's crown, an ambitious agenda based around social responsibility and community action. But what do we really know about how it will work and at what cost? Joining me in the studio are Stephen Bubb, the chief executive of Akivo, the Organisation for Voluntary Sector Leaders, and Nick Temple, the policy and communications director at SSE, the School for Social Entrepreneurs. Hello to you both.
Hello, David.
Before I ask for your perspectives on the Big Society, we've been out and about talking to people from the sector about their views.
My name's Sally Jenkinson and I work for an organisation called the Children's Trust. It's decisions being made more locally and people actually taking care and responsibility for each other more locally without the government telling them that they have to do that.
My name is Philip Rosser. I'm a director for a charity called Independent Age, which provides independent living for the elderly. I don't know what it means, but I can only speculate. It means wanting to improve the general condition of the population, which I can't see is much different from the Labour Party or any other political party, really. So I wait to see a better definition of it. It doesn't mean anything to me at this time.
I'm Jan Tallis. I'm the chief executive at School Home Support, and we work with children in school who are having trouble at school because of their home circumstances. It means that getting a lot of volunteers to do things that used to be paid for.
My name is Ian Shaw. I work with Blackboard Europe. The whole concept of the third sector in a recession, the third sector or the not-for-profit sector is remarkably resilient in a recession, and certainly government is looking towards using charity resources in the public sector, and I think that has to be a good thing for all, particularly welfare charities, but for the third sector in general.
So, Stephen, you've put together a weighty document, The Big Society, Moving from Romanticism to Reality. What's your take? Where do the opportunities lie for charities?
Well, I think Big Society is like a long piece of string on which the Conservatives are hanging a range of balloons. So you've got Big Society Bank, you know, more volunteering, community organisers, community empowerment, charities delivering more services. Some of these ideas are better worked out than others. The general context, I think, is a good one. You have a government and a prime minister that is talking about the role that third sector organisations play, a role, a bigger role for civil society in a way we have not heard from prime ministers before. And that's a huge opportunity for us. But along with that long piece of string comes an age of austerity and cuts. And we are already seeing the effect of public spending cuts on the sector. So how this pans out, I don't know. I think we will see more public service delivery through third sector organisations. I think that will grow. On the other hand, cuts will hit very hard smaller organisations.
Nick, does the Big Society idea fill you with hope or with sense of dread?
I guess it's similar to Stephen in the mixture of both. I mean, I guess I enjoyed the string of balloons analogy, but I'd go with a kind of canvas analogy in a sense. I think they're kind of trying to give us the frame for what this stuff means to them. And to some extent, it's a bit of a blank canvas at the moment. I think that is a challenge in that we can't really see how it's going to pan out, but also an opportunity in the fact that we can help create that and help produce it. So there are big opportunities ahead. I think it's also slightly about a kind of an emphasis on social capital, on cohesion, on a kind of broader approach to this rather than one that's perhaps more narrowly defined.
Well, we thought we'd get a frontline view of the big society. So we went to talk to Toby Bloom, the chief executive of Urban Forum. That's a charity that supports communities to have a greater say over decisions that affect them. Here's his take.
And with the blink of an eye, it was gone. The New Labour experiment heralded a third way under the careful watch of Blair and Brown. And for 13 years, the newly rebranded third sector embraced the government's offer of access, though not necessarily influence, and support, though not always money. The term third sector has been instantly consigned to the policy dustbin, to be replaced by civil society. And the vision for this newfound civility is to be found with a shiny new wrapper with the words Big Society emblazoned on it. Whether or not you believe this is something genuinely new, it's certainly not a term that you'd have heard coming out of the mouth of Margaret, there's no such thing as society, Thatcher. The Big Society was given a pretty rough time from commentators during the election campaign, many of whom saw it as a cheap way to plug the gaps left when the public spending axe fell. The idea was probably not helped by talk of little platoons and a neighbourhood army. Though with the recent anniversary of Dunkirk evacuation, little platoons somehow takes on a more rosy hue. At its heart is community organising of the sort practised by President Obama and in the UK by the likes of Regenerate and London Citizens. That approach owes much to the granddaddy of community organising, Saul Alinsky, and his seminal book, Rules for Radicals, which he wrote shortly before his death in 1971. Big Society has been the subject of a great deal of online chatter, with commentators and practitioners from what used to be known as the third sector, at least by some, tying themselves in knots, trying to decipher precisely what it means in practice. Big Society seems to reflect a shift towards the more informal community sector that accounts for the vast majority of charitable activity. A degree of rebalancing towards the parts of the sector that have often been overlooked in recent times is to be welcomed. However, my concern is that this also suggests much less emphasis on ensuring that these community activists have the support available to them to be successful. Alinsky said he wrote Rules for Radicals to help those without power to take it from those who hold power. If the government and civil society can put addressing power inequalities at the heart of the Big Society programme, then there is a real chance it will have a radically transformative effect. But that's a big if, and I'm personally very worried that competing priorities and vested interest will scupper yet another big idea.
So, Stephen and Nick, do you share Toby's concerns that the Big Society, or perhaps we should be calling it Big SOC for short, will lead to sort of infighting between charities and social enterprises all competing for the same limited resources? Stephen?
No, because I think the bit of Big Society that is better thought through is public service reform. And it's very clear the government have already started on programmes to ensure that there's more service delivery through third sector organisations, and we're already involved in those. So there will be a bigger market there, and we will get bigger on the back of that. I think the difficulties will lie in what I described as the rather romantic notions about community empowerment. I think it's very interesting that they've discovered Saul Alinsky, but they've discovered him, but they don't really understand him. So frankly, the plans around community organisers at the moment are sketchy in the extreme.
Nick, romantic?
Are you asking if I am or the plans are? I mean, I think they're more kind of broad based at the moment. For me, the challenge is one less of competition, which kind of assumes that isn't already happening in terms of competition and infighting. But I think it's more about the challenge between what the funding or lack of funds will mean in terms of needing to scale and to consolidate commissioning at scale and achieve replication of successful organisations. but wanting also to achieve something much broader that Toby was alluding to around developing community spirit, developing at the grassroots, developing those communities and neighbourhoods. And I'm not sure whether, I guess, and it's a challenge for us to contribute to as well, whether they've been able to kind of work out how to join those two up.
Are we talking about replacing the state? Is it as radical as that?
I don't think it is as radical as that. I mean, I think there's an inevitability that there were going to be cuts, regardless of which government was going to get in, there were going to be cuts. And actually, there was a fair amount of crossover between the party's manifestos. It's just about what happens on top of a kind of baseline of public services. And as Stephen says, I think that is a challenge, and we're already starting to feel some of that. But there is an opportunity there, and we're going to have to compete, prove our impact well, show how we can build trust and show how we can deliver and ourselves move from rhetoric to reality.
I don't think we're talking about replacing the state in terms of its strategic role, but I suspect we are talking about replacing the state as a service deliverer, and they are two different issues. I think the delivery will increasingly come through third sector organisations, private sector organisations, because I think the public sector has been bad at that. But what we can't have is the state withdrawing from funding effective services and taking a strategic role and ensuring you have equity in distribution of resources.
OK, for now, Stephen and Nick, thanks very much. This new parliament sees the largest group of entirely new MPs since the Second World War. Referred to as newbies, they enter parliament at a time when its reputation has never been lower, and many changes are on the way which weren't even anticipated during the election campaign. What's interesting this time round, though, is that at least 25 of these new MPs worked in the voluntary sector before the election, and some of them very recently. So what will they offer the electorate? More importantly, what will they offer the charity sector? We've been to meet two of the new intake, Stuart Andrew, new MP for Pudsey in Leeds, and Lisa Nandy, MP for Wigan.
It's like a real maze. Somebody called it the first day at Hogwarts. And it really is. It's sort of, you go down one corridor and you think you're actually getting somewhere, and you realise you've actually come out in completely the opposite direction to where you were hoping to attend.
I spent the first few days trying to find a desk, and luckily John Crudders took pity on me and let me squat in his office for a few weeks while they sorted that out. So I at least had somewhere to plug my laptop in, which helped quite a lot.
My name's Stuart Andrew. I'm the new Conservative MP for the Pudsey constituency, but I was formerly the head of fundraising at Martin House Children's Hospice and have spent the last 15 years in the charity sector.
My name's Lisa Nandy. I'm the newly elected MP for Wigan. My background is that for the last 5 years I've worked for the Children's Society, and before that I worked for a youth homelessness charity, Centrepoint.
When I was first chosen as the candidate for my constituency, I made it very clear that if I got elected, the third sector and the charities that I've been working with and other charities like them would be close to my heart, and I would continue to support them. After all, when you've worked for these sorts of organisations, you see the passion and the drive that makes first-class services being delivered. So I've already been in touch with the place where I used to work, Martin House Children's Hospice. I've been speaking to the head of the finance there and sort of suggesting ways that we can highlight the cause of children's hospices, for example.
We're in Central Lobby, which is where everybody comes to meet their MPs. So you can see over there's a group of school children who've come in for a tour, and they'll be meeting their MP probably at the end of that tour. I think when you've worked in the charity sector for a long time, you have a slightly outsider perspective on what goes on in Parliament and how politics affects people's lives. It's quite a campaigning role in a lot of charities that you play in holding the government to account. So I think you bring that freshness and that willingness to challenge, certainly when you come in here. I wonder if that will change. I've only been an MP for a month, so it may change over time. But I think you have those existing relationships with charities as well, and that keeps you very grounded because they hold you to account just as you want to hold the government to account.
It's always very busy here while the House is sitting, because obviously people are keen to come in and see how it works, but you do need the police to help sometimes carve out a bit of space for you to go and do some work for your constituents.
There is a similarity between being in the hospice and my job there and being a Member of Parliament, and that is that no 2 days are the same. Anybody who works in the third sector knows that you work incredibly long hours, and that's the same as being an MP. So actually, it's a very good transition. There are those of others that have done 9-to-5 jobs before this, and I think they're finding it quite difficult. This is one of the main committee room corridors. Lots of the select committees that we've, in fact, we've been electing their chairs today.
I think the diversity of backgrounds in Parliament is something that's really important. I know one of the things that people are quite concerned about in this Parliament is there aren't many people with a science background, for example. So it will definitely help that there are a number of us on all sides of the House who come from the charity sector. Charities have taken on a much larger role in providing state services, which may no longer exist. So it's going to be a really difficult time, I think, for the charity sector. And having a few of us who really do understand what those pressures are and what it's going to mean for the people those charities represent is going to be really important.
When you've worked in the charity sector, you are, first of all, always very, very conscious of how you're going to fund the services that you provide. And that, you know, is very relevant today when our finances are in such a mess and we don't have much money going around. I think also that the experiences that I've seen are that individuals in our communities work tirelessly and give hundreds and hundreds of hours of free time, in essence, to improve the lives of others. And I think, you know, we can look at that, and it's a big part of what David Cameron was talking about in the election about the big society, you know. So hopefully I can transfer some of that knowledge that I've learned over the years in the sector here in Parliament.
I'd really, really encourage more people from the charity sector to get into politics. I think there is a fiercely independent streak in the charity sector, which is really important, that many people see themselves set apart from politicians and from politics. But I would be worried if people, for that reason, weren't willing to come in here and give it a try, because I think those people have such a lot to contribute. And having only been here for a few weeks, I've already seen that the level of access that you have here and the platform that you have as a newly elected MP means you can achieve things that you just can't achieve in the sector. So I'd really like to see more people entering Parliament.
Stephen and Nick, what do you think? Will you be targeting these MPs because of their background, or does that risk typecasting them, or indeed narrowing your firepower too much?
I think it's great, actually. We will have a charity group of MPs that is a bit like you used to have the miners group of MPs, who are always quite influential on issues. And there's a group there we can use to sponsor events, etc. I think that's great. There's already a big bunch of charity peers, and these are a very useful lobby for us, and we will exploit them.
Do you agree, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, the School for Social Entrepreneurs is a kind of learning by doing institution, and these people have learned by doing, and on that basis they'll have that much better an understanding of what it's really like on the other side. And, you know, whenever we've come into contact with MPs who have that background, or we've done placements, and equally now civil servants being encouraged to do placements and days of community service themselves, then we've always found it to be very mutually beneficial.
And is Lisa and Nandy right? Should we be encouraging the best and the brightest from the sector to go into Parliament, or do we risk losing that talent?
What's interesting now is how working in charities has become a career of choice in a way it wasn't 10 years ago. So you see loads of young people who think that this is a career for them, and that's a fantastic development.
Yeah, I would agree strongly. I mean, I think we're seeing also more of the younger generation who are looking for kind of meaning and purpose in their careers, and it seems often like a natural progression to work in charity, work in this sector, and then look to other aspirations.
So, they were only in for a day, and it was one of the first things the new government did. Third sector seamlessly became civil society. You might remember the branding consultant from our first programme.
We talk about the charity sector, the civil society sector, the social enterprise sector, the third sector, the volunteer sector. Is this all the same sector? Is it 5, 6, 7 sectors? It's very confusing indeed.
Well, we're now calling it civil society. Do we think the third sector label's gone forever? What do you think about this, Stephen?
Well, I'm rather old-fashioned and think that we decide in our sector what we call ourselves rather than the government. So I shall continue to talk about the third sector. It's something we understand and members understand. I think the government are already falling into a bit of a pickle on this because civil society is not a term that is readily understood. So they have to continue to talk about charities, voluntary organisations. They sometimes remember social enterprises and then they talk about cooperatives and then they forget about community organisations. So it makes speeches and press releases really rather long. So I think, you know, in a year's time, we'll be back to third sector.
Nick, do you think social enterprise might slip off the lorry?
I mean, we're very used to definition debates and tedious linguistic muddles on the social enterprise and social entrepreneurship world. I guess from our perspective, it's much more important what we do and how we communicate that than what we call it.
I agree with that, actually.
Thank you very much to both of you for being with me today. I'd like to thank Stephen Bubb, Nick Temple, Toby Bloom, Stuart Andrew and Lisa Nandy for their contributions to this programme. And thanks also to my producers at Sound Delivery. I'm David Brindle. You've been listening to the Charity Effectiveness Podcast, brought to you by Society Guardian and knowhownonprofit.org. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.